This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Thames and me, Phil Nicol. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
That note, how did I hit that?
Oh, was it you that hit that, Phil? You never tell us about it.
You're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh. My name is Phil Nicol.
And I'm David Timms.
And our podcast celebrates comedy songs and musical comedians. And we reminisce, we have a laugh, we talk about all sorts of different things. And over the course of the podcast, we're going to be looking into all sorts of variety of stuff about musical comedy. Yeah.
Absolutely. Phil, how's your week been?
Well, David, let me tell you. That's a great segue. Someone posted online this week, and if you're a musical comedy fan, Haggis McLeod, who is one of the bookers for the Glastonbury Festival and takes care of the circus and theatre cabaret fields, posted online Tim Tyler as Mr. Peepee, who was Mr. Peepee or is Mr. Peepee, on the Big Gig Australia from many years ago. And he's a great act. He's like more of a clown act. He does a ping pong juggling thing where
he does this amazing things with his mouth.
Yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah. Does, yeah. He juggles ping pong balls with his mouth, basically. But before he does that on this gig, he sings a song called Her Bathing Suit Never Gets Wet. And it's a ukulele, him and his mouth. Well, obviously he's singing, but he makes these crazy noises. So check that out.
Yeah, it's a very, very good song. I had to listen to it earlier on, and it made me really, really chuckle.
And later on in today's show, we're going to talk to David about some workshop he runs for mental health.
Absolutely, yeah. And we're also going to be talking to one of your best friends in comedy.
We are. I'm so excited because we're going to be speaking to not just one of my best friends in comedy, but I think one of the guys that I grew up with. He was in a comedy duo called Big and Daft. He won So You Think You're Funny years ago. And I've been hanging around with this guy. We've recorded stuff together. I think he's one of the funniest men in the world. Now, most people don't know him as a musical comedian. They know him from Upstart Crow. But this is Rob Rouse. How many comedy songs do you think you've written, Rob?
Two.
That qualifies you for this podcast.
Deeply shocked to be on the podcast. No, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, but one of them is about 10 years long, so...
Yes, well, exactly. Yes. What I make up lacking in frequency, I make up for in volume.
Yeah.
But no, I think...
So keep listening and come back and stick around for our Rob Rouse interview. It's not only funny, but he does a song on it that's, if you're a musical comedy fan, it's absolutely hysterical. I did actually say that Rob was part of a comedy duo.
Right.
And it wasn't a comedy duo. It was a comedy trio called Big and Daft.
There's only two names.
I know. It makes it even funnier, right? It's trio. But I'm not sure what the third guy, Tom, is doing now. But I know that the other comedian in the group was Ian Boldsworth, who you guys might know from the Parapod, which is a huge pod about, the paranormal.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so so we're talking to Rob Rouse. Stick around for that. I've been looking into my old comedy songs, like this
ones that you've written.
I've been doing that, but also the podcast made me kind of think about what my influences were and where and how comedy songs are sort of all around us all the time. I mean, there are a number of comedy songs that have gone to like number one, number two in the charts.
I'm just thinking of this. There's one that I used to sing when I was, I didn't really sing it, but it was a phrase used from it. I come from a big Italian family, and my nonna, she was the most amazing woman, and I miss her very, very dearly. And she sang She used to say, "Ah, shut up with your face." Sometimes, which was Joe
Dolce.
Joe Dolce.
Joe Dolce.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Is Tim's an Italian name?
No.
So it's short for Timolo Lelo.
That's not what it's short for.
No, that sounded more Spanish.
But Conti was my grandmother's. So.
Really? Yeah. Are you actually look a bit like Tom Conti?
Do I?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Or Nina Conti's monkey.
Funny. Yeah. So that song, "Shut Up or Your Face," is etched in my mind from many years ago.
Joe Dolce's "Shut Up Your Face" is one of those comedy songs where if you know it, you know every single word. I mean, it's not difficult to know every single word. There's not that many of them, but similar to Ivor Cutler's work, which is very memorable, you only have to hear it a couple of times until you know it. Joe Dolce's "Shut Up Your Face" is.
Do you know it?
I think so.
Do you want to try it?
Yeah. Okay. What's the matter, you?
Hey!
Got to no respect. What do you think you do? Why you looking so sad? It's not so bad. What's a nicer place? Ah, shut up your face. I nearly got it.
That's pretty good.
Try it one more time together. You sing it with me.
Oh, okay.
What's the matter, you?
Hey!
Got to no respect. What do you think you do? Why you look so sad? It's not so bad. It's a nicer place. Shut up your face. That went to number one, that song.
That was number one. It was number one for a long time in Australia as well, I think. Yeah. There's an amazing bit in this song. In fact, I did a little bit of... looking up about him a while ago and looking up research. That's the one. just because I was intrigued about him, because I was very intrigued that he was actually Australian, first of all. But then I did a little bit of research and was watching a couple of these videos. And in each one of these videos, he asks for people to do solos halfway through.
Right.
And then and he goes, "That's enough." So he'll start
like a running gag.
Yeah, yeah. It's brilliant. So he starts the accordion off and it's like, "That's enough." But he does it in another song with a piano solo. And the piano solo literally goes, "Ding, ding, ding, ding." And that's it. That's the whole thing. So it's very funny. Well, the videos are very silly.
Oh my God. True story time. It's my turn.
Okay.
Oh my God. True story time. I actually, my agent in Australia for a while was a guy called Andrew Walker, was also Joe Dolce's agent. Because Joe Dolce still performs and sort of lives off that song, I imagine.
But, I think so.
Yeah, he probably has to close. It's probably like his satisfaction, you know, like the Rolling Stones satisfaction, that's his. And a lot of great musical comedy comes from Australia. I think it's because of the Scottish and Irish heritage. They just have this mad culture for laughter and drinking and frivolity. And you've got Doug Anthony All-Stars, you've got Tim Minchin, of course.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of unknown people that we might even look into some more of the Australian. When I first went to Melbourne in 1990, there was bands with like full tubas and stuff on stage. It was like very, very, they didn't take themselves very seriously, the old Australians.
So at the festival there,
the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Yeah. There must be a big musical comedy scene there.
I off the top of my head, I can't think of any of them. The Doug Anthony All-Stars were the main ones. They were like our nemesis. We were like the Canadian Doug Anthony All-Stars, or they were the Australian Corky and the Juice Pigs.
I can imagine it being some sort of West Side Story affair and, and these two bands going against each other. Who can be more punalific?
They were like little punk rockers, and we were beyond that.
Oh, right. They were little punk rockers and you were big punk rockers?
No, we were surrealists.
Okay.
Who thought that they smelled bad. If you're listening, Paul McDermott, you smell bad. Now, we've had overwhelming response to our Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition.
I didn't think it was going to work.
To be honest, I didn't. We were just sort of fishing out there. It's a real contest, and I don't like the idea of it being a competition because
it isn't a contest. The same thing,
not really.
Okay,
but anyway, David. so we've got like a whole lot of. submissions that came through. If you want to submit a song, you go to songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com and enter a song.
Yeah, we did have some people sending through like 10 songs, and we'd really like it if you just picked your best one and sent that one to us.
Not your whole back catalogue.
No.
Anyway, we've picked two for this week, and this is the runner-up and the winner, and they're going to go into the next round. And if you want to hear the rest of them, you go to songsinthekeyoflaugh.com, and you can hear all the entries. We're going to put all the entries online so that everyone's song is going to get heard. But here's the two we've chosen for this week. The runner-up is Martin Zerfus, and this is 8 First Cousins.
My mum's my biggest fan, I'm a second born son. I've got 8 first cousins and I've only slept with one. We got drunk at a party, thought we might have some fun. I've got 7 other cousins, extra DNA with one. My cousin's once my auntie, now I call my auntie mum. I've got 7 other cousins and we don't tell everyone. She didn't have to change her name. Our kids are fucking dumb. I've got 8 other cousins and I own a Labrador with one. A pedigree from the same bloodline.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, wow. That was great.
Weird and wonderful. I love
and that,
it.
That's the first one ever on the
Songs of the Key of Life
competition.
Comedy contest.
That's the one. we're now going to listen to the winner from this week, and it's a fantastic song.
Really good.
This is Eddie Hurst, and I'm not going to tell you the name of the song. No, here it is.
You've got a secret you're keeping from me, but I'm gonna find out. I need honesty. You turn away, but it's clear to see from your ankle to your thigh. You've got a robot knee.
What?
Robot knee, robot knee. It shoots out lasers and it brews coffee. Robot. Cybernetic technology, so don't hide, be true to me.
Show us your robot knee.
I've got a secret I'm keeping from you. You might not believe it, but I promise it's true. You see, while you're mostly human, except for one part machinery, I'm mostly made of wires and cogs and technology. Except for one part of my body. Can you guess what it is?
My knee.
Human knee, human knee. It just burns when I spill coffee. Human knee. Was stolen from me on a raid on my laboratory. I've been searching since the 70s, and I think finally, I think you've got my knee.
Give it back. It's mine. Get your own.
That's Eddie Hurst and Robotney.
Such a good song.
Yeah. So now, David, you've been doing some work with a mental health group. Is that right?
Yeah, kind of. I've been doing work with for quite a long time with people with dementia. I run Singing for the Brain sessions with the Alzheimer's Society. So we do, it's like group music therapy. You sing lots of old songs, sing in different parts, sing rounds, and just it's meant to just stimulate the mind.
Yeah, these people with dementia remember the songs.
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes you have people come to the sessions who unfortunately have lost the ability to, you know, string a sentence together.
Right.
But they'll be able to sing a song from the beginning to the end. It's amazing what music can do.
What's the name of this this group?
It's Singing for the Brain. It's with the Alzheimer's Society.
I'm singing with the brain.
That is one that has been done. Absolutely. that's the idea of it. Yeah. It's a great. They're great sessions, and I've been doing it for about 8 years.
And this is a charity that you can donate money to.
Yeah, you can absolutely. Yeah, it's the Alzheimer's Society.
Do you write comedy songs?
Ever dream of being the next Tim Minchin?
Or being Tim Minchin?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Why not enter our Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition and maybe appear on our podcast?
With Tim Minchin.
That's better.
The Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition. Enter today. Visit songsinthekeyoflaugh.com for details.
We're gonna get given a song we know and have to change it up and make it so hysterical that you win the cup. This game is really easy, just follow all the rules. The rules are really simple, you're not allowed to lose.
So it's a quick fire parody game. You guys know the rules. I give David a title and an artist, and then he has to come up with a quick fire parody of it. They're usually pretty bad, right?
Yeah, they're usually dreadful.
And then David gives me one, or we can even start. Why don't you start with me this week?
Yeah, all right. Could you do 21st Century Boy?
The T-Rex song.
T-Rex song, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Let's see. Oh, this, I'm going to go. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Okay, it's, okay, 21st century. Here we go. I've got it, okay. Friend Seth is good, friend Seth is fine, friend Seth is hot, just like rocks, bro. Like a sting, it's like a bee, hanging like a cat. Man, I gotta be, boy, I wanna be your toy. Cause it's plain to see you were meant for me, cause I'm your boy, 16th century toy. 16th century toy, I want to be your boy. 16th century toy, I want to do with whatever you like.
Phil, that's very, very good.
quick fire parody game.
Okay, I mean, it wasn't great, but it's
no, that was very good.
It's a quick,
Phil.
It's quick fire parody.
I thought that was brilliant.
Okay, well, I'm gonna give you one. How about Stand By Me? Who's
Benny
that?
King?
Benny King. BB King? Benny King.
Benny King.
Ben E. King.
Ben.
Not Benny King.
No, not Benny.
Okay, this is Benny King. It's a quick fire parody game. And the song is Stand By Me.
Okay.
You got one?
I have one word.
Okay.
Let me make the rest of it around it. Under a tree, I get worried. If I hear buzzing near me,
all right.
I won't stay there much longer, just in case. Stand by, bees. Oh, it's not good, is it?
quick fire parody game.
I'm still laughing at that. Stand By Bees.
Yeah, all right. It would have been. These are genuinely done off the cuff.
Okay.
So sometimes it goes wrong.
Sure. Let's try and redeem the podcast now by listening to our special guest of the week.
Absolutely. He's one of your best friends in comedy, isn't he?
Well, I really do like the guy. He's a real sweetheart. His name is Rob Rouse.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The guest on today's show is someone you might know. And if you don't, that's your own fault. But you'll know them soon.
You boy, you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize. And this week their name is... Insert name here.
It's Rob Rouse.
Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Rouse.
Hey.
Why? Have we started?
How have we started?
The heck are you, Rob?
I'm smashing.
For those of you that don't know, Rob Rouse is a stand-up comedian. He's an actor. He's a singer. He's a songwriter. He's a dancer. He's a lover. He's a pigeon feeder. He's a chicken owner. He's a chicken owner.
A chicken racer.
He races chickens. He doesn't mean he doesn't sit on them and race them around. He lets them race them eat themselves.
Yeah, well, I only did that once. It was clear the sport wasn't going to work out.
Yeah, exactly. That must have been a big chicken.
It was a very big chicken. But she still wasn't big enough.
So for our listeners, if you don't know Rob Rouse, you've probably seen him on Upstart Crow, but he's been a stand-up comedian for many, many years. He was born in Gosworth. Wow.
Incredible. That's incredible. Incredible depth of knowledge you've got there, Phil.
Well, this is a learning podcast as well, Rob, as much as it is a fun podcast. So we hope to impart some of Rob's knowledge to you about songwriting and comedy songwriting. How many comedy songs do you think you've written, Rob?
Two.
That qualifies you for this podcast.
To be on the podcast. No, I don't know.
But one of them is about 10 years long. So
yes, well, exactly. Yes. What I make up lacking in frequency, I make up for in volume. But no, I think it's something that. So I've been doing stand up since 1998.
Yes,
and then I was
you were in the So You Think You're Funny. You won So You Think You're Funny.
That's right. Yeah, the year after Peter Kay.
Who's that?
We don't know. We're not sure who he is. but apparently, it's quite a big shakes. But
I heard the K stands for ketamine.
It could be ketamine. Yeah, or cow spelt wrong. It could be either of those.
That's probably more. I think it was probably Peter Cow.
Yeah, Peter Cow.
And he just shortened it to K because people made fun of him.
But yeah, so then I was in a sketch group. Till about 2002, called Big and Daft, and I think that's probably where I first started writing comedy songs. Yeah. I remember the first one we did was it was in 1999 when we did our first show together in the Wee Room, which actually was a cupboard. It was a storage room. We also had a sketch where because we played three characters. I was a simpleton.
It was a real stretch for me acting wise to play the part of someone who was mentally quite simple. But I don't know, I've slipped into a bad impression of Sir Ian McKellen. But I
did a gig with someone the other week and turned out they were an impressionist. And I always think I can do impressions until I do them and I hear them like through headphones back into my own head and realise I haven't quite nailed it. Anyway, but we're in the Wee Room and we had a sketch where my character had been quite bullied and was emotionally quite low and was left on his own, and he ended up instigating a very innocent game of fetch with a member of the audience.
Right.
And then he would throw this item and then bring it back. But it was sort of mute at that anyway. So it's quite the strange, but it kind of evolved that I was like a dog playing this game with him to try and comfort myself. And then when I'd fetched it three times, I'd relax and sit on their knee, at which point I'd take out of my pocket a small bottle and secrete it between my legs and squeeze it out. And of course, it was just pure mineral water. But to all intents and purposes, it was like I'd wet myself while sitting on someone's lap. Yeah. And they would invariably shriek, and then John and Ian would come back on and, you know, present them to the audience, and I'd have weed on them. I mean, these were very different times.
This was
1999.
You could have been Louis C.K. for that.
I could have been completely cancelled. But it was very innocent because it was so childlike.
Sure it was innocent. But, you say you're innocent.
Well, I say we were in the wee room.
Tell it.
But
of course.
But one show which was I didn't realise that the person I'd weed on was a lady called Toni Arthur, who only when she stood up and presented back to me was not only the life partner of Malcolm Hay, who was the old comedy editor at Time Out in London, but most importantly was the one of the presenters of Play School when I was a child. So yes. I weed on the lady from Play School, which for any of our younger listeners was the show on the BBC that all children of in the 70s and 80s grew up watching religiously. Yeah. And I weed.
Toni was famous.
She was huge, like rock star stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for explaining that. I'm not old enough.
No, you're not. And
that,
I crumbled when I realised who it was. It was incredible. And the only other person I've met, because, you know, inevitably you're a comedian for long enough, you bump into famous people, and had this same impact on me. A couple of years ago, I met Floella Benjamin for the first time.
Oh, cool.
And genuinely, it was like, for me, it was like rock star shit. It really was. Like, I was speechless. It's Floella Benjamin. That's my childhood. And I met her. I kind of went, and she just put her arms out and said, "You're one of my Play School babies." And just gave me a big hug. And she's so when she meets people who grew up watching, she just goes, "It's all right. You're one of my Play School babies." And she can express that, so you don't have to sit there and blither in front of her.
When you were Play School age, were you working and writing comedy songs, like even just daft to make your family laugh?
I don't know. I mean, I've certainly always I've always really loved comedy, and comedy for me certainly was how I as a child started making sense of the world, I think.
But the music, were you musical?
No, I didn't have any. I've had no lessons because my sister used to have piano lessons. She's about 3 years older than me, with a lady in the village called Mrs. Smith. And it was reported back to me that Mrs. Smith used to keep time on the side of the piano with her wooden leg. And as a small child, that absolutely scared the shit out of me. So I didn't want to have piano lessons. But my dad always had a few guitars lying around the house, just acoustic guitars. And he never learned really anything. But it's a keen amateur, and we just play a few chords, then put it down. So there was always a piano in the house, and so I just mucked around with things. So I've never had any lessons, and I see myself certainly musician-wise as a rank amateur at all of the things that I do. I'm immensely limited in what I can technically achieve, but that hasn't in any way, shape, or form denuded my enjoyment of interacting with music on any level. I think it's always that's what I love about it, whether you're just banging a pan as a kid or hitting a duvet cover or a pillowcase with a drumstick. It's something quite profound and taps into something very basic within all of us.
Right. So where you're currently sitting, obviously our listeners can't see this.
Yeah.
But are you in your garage?
I'm in my garage. I converted a couple of years ago into my own crazy room, I suppose.
I'm very intrigued by this.
Well, happily, I can give you the full breakdown of how I did it. But it's not very musical. But it's interesting. I've come to a conclusion or realization at this point in my life that all things creative, making something, all inform the other one. So I find if I'm building something, like learning how to build stuff, then going to do a stand-up gig afterwards, assuming I've managed to have a little disco kip in the car, well, I just need 10 minutes to reset. Then when you've been dealing with something in three dimensions, it's a real problem or a puzzle to solve, then choosing the right words in the moment to use to describe what you're trying to get to on stage, actually all of your faculties are running. So, and I've learned that making stuff, whether I'm building something with my hands or with what's left of my brain, all of those things are things that make me happy. So building somewhere to then make something in was really exciting, and I love being in here, and my wife and children tease me about how much time I spend in there.
I was going to ask how much time you get to spend there, so obviously quite a bit. I'm doing that with our house, so we're doing that this
great
weekend. I'm very excited about it. But I've also seen that you've built a load of your own guitars as well, haven't you?
Yeah,
lots of cool guitars.
Well, I got
there.
Into making guitars from kits. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago. I did a gig somewhere and it was quite hard work. And I remember thinking, an old friend of mine has always said, if you ever do a gig that's tough, then spend that money on something fun that you can then, so you can then transmute that kind of frustration into something nice. And I bought my first ever kit guitar, and I'd always wanted a Gibson SG, but a proper one's really expensive. They're amazing guitars. So I made one from a kit for about £120. And it was so much fun to put it together. And then, but there was a problem with some of the pre-drilled holes were a bit off. And I rang the chap who I got it off, and he was really kind. And he didn't have another one. He said, "Well, you can try and block them with some dowels and then re-drill him. But I'll send you another kit." And he sent me a kit for like a Gibson 335, which is a big hollow body one. He sent me a kit for that for about £30. So I ended up making two guitars that I had always wanted for about £140. And it was nuts.
Amazing.
And through building them, I've learned a lot about how the instruments sort of work. And if you take your time, and it's the balance between the neck angle and where the nut is and the top nut and the bridge and everything, and you slowly learn how to bed those things in and make the guitars better and better. So I've got some guitars that play really nicely, but they're dirty cheap, you know. But they're great, but they're mine as well. So that the and then when I did Edinburgh this year and I used one that I built myself to do a show I'd written myself, it felt really nice just because, you know, it's I like the being able to do things on the cheap, but also
yes, it must be satisfying to be standing on stage playing the instrument that you made, singing a song that you've written.
Yeah, well, I thought why not go the whole hog, you know, and see what I can do. And then I also made one for my daughter, which I don't know if you can see there, if I just turn the camera around slightly. The pink one on there, I built, I got, because she wanted a short scale guitar, because she's only 9. So I got her I got it from the Cancer Research Shop, like a Squire Stratocaster, so it's like short one, but I took it to bits, sprayed it bright pink, and then made out a scratch plate in the shape of a unicorn, and then put the pickups back in it and stuck it back together, and that's called the Unicaster, which I think
Unicaster. Oh, that's amazing, the Unicaster.
It's gorgeous.
So I got it for about £4, like this piece of whatever it's called, the plastic.
Yeah,
and then cut it into a unicorn shape, and it's like sparkly, and then put the pickups into it, and yeah, so it's a one-off, the Unicaster.
The Unicaster, you could sell that.
We're gonna have to have a picture of
I'll
that.
Get your
show
picture
it on
that.
Our social media.
No problem. That's the Unicaster. Yeah. But yeah, so
lovely.
And I kind of thought, and it was weird, especially as we went into like the lockdowns, and obviously as performers, we couldn't do what we were used to doing. It really made me think about, right, how can I be creative and what can I do? And I started doing a lot of stuff online on Patreon and stuff, which I'm still doing. And amongst that kind of encouraged me to just keep making and creating stuff. And then thinking, which has taken me to the point now where me and my wife are currently writing a musical out of nowhere. I've never written a musical before, but just thinking, there's no reason why we can't.
What's the musical? What's the
so Helen, my wife, she wrote a book. Again, it all comes from making stuff. So I think in 2018 we did our first Edinburgh show together, where she'd written a play called The Ladder about a lady who got stuck up the top of a ladder with a finger caught in the mechanism.
Yeah.
And it was a solo play at first, and then she decided she needed like a supporting character to help sort of annotate it.
Right.
And I was by the kettle in the kitchen while Helen was casting. So again, right place, right time.
Not necessarily
the right guy, but you know, I was available.
It's a who you know kind of business.
Yeah, it very much is. So I was, you know, hold my hands up, bit of nepotism there, and I got the part. But I wangled my way in, and then she asked me to sort of...
Can I just cut in? Didn't Larry the Ladder Johnson... his agents involved, wasn't there some kind of scandal based around?
They got involved, but they all died in what feels like really odd coincidental circumstances at the same time. But we've very much moved past that now.
Sure.
So it's not something.
And the irony being, it was a fire or something. There was no ladder.
It was hard to. And there was a lot of. There was like some kind of chemical blaze. But anyway, I wouldn't know. I don't know. I don't know how who did it.
No.
But they're all. But that's.
I thought Helen might have been able to tell with her chemistry.
She
degree,
can't remember much about anything anymore. So as I say, we've very much moved past it, and probably don't. Okay. I don't want to get the podcast closed down with any legal wranglings.
No, absolutely. Yeah, not. So we probably just Larry's people
we just snip the whole thing out. That's probably the best thing.
We might have to beep Larry's name
just
out.
Beep Larry's name out. But and then Helen asked me to sort of annotate it, but also play a couple of supporting characters. But I also had to sort of score it, which I'd never done before because I've never, apart from I was in a band at college called Saucy Jack, where I was the singer and rhythm guitarist. And our lead guitarist, John Mad Dog McCraw. We also did a cover of I think it was our second gig. There was a song off the Manic Street Preachers second album called "Drug Drug Druggy," and it's got a really epic guitar solo in it. And we set off playing the song probably about twice as fast as it should have been. Right. And I remember, we knew the solo was coming up, and we were all kind of looking at John. And then we just kind of, and then all eyes fell on John as it came to that, as we bridged through to the solo. And I remember, certainly all of us remember, John absolutely got it off the laces. And we got, and as a result, after that, we got, horrifically drunk. And then me and John were sat at the end, because it was a student band competition, that was it. And we didn't win. But in our minds, we'd won the lottery. A band, whatever level you experience it on, playing music with other people, it's a connection in a way that I don't think you can match with anything really. It's insanely exciting, exciting. Yeah. I remember the first time I stood there with a guitar in front of an audience, I got disco leg. And my leg was wobbling and shaking so much, I couldn't actually stand. And I'd go to the other leg, and that was just shaking too. So
really?
I actually get I get nervous playing an instrument in front of people, which is probably why I used to get so pissed. But obviously, inevitably, that doesn't lead to decent music, but it leads to memories. So it's taken a lot of time for me to be happy to play an instrument in front of a comedy audience.
Elvis had the same problem.
Yeah.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's how he got that whole style.
Yeah. He was just shit scared. Yeah.
He was just fucking terrified.
Yeah, and he used to have to eat squirrels and just drink and drugs to excess in order to perform, didn't he? Which
Well, that's why how he died.
Sadly,
he
what took him?
The peanut butter and squirrel sandwich.
That's right, peanut butter and squirrel smoothie. He was on a health kick. Obviously, my relationship with David is in its infancy. Notwithstanding, it's a lovely relationship that we have, David.
So lovely.
But I've known Phil since I started out, and one of the things that always impressed me about the way that Phil uses music on stage is there is zero showboating from Phil for the sake of showboating, if that makes sense. So I always think that everything that you do musically, despite you being a brilliant musician, it's the intensity with which you do it means that everything you do with your instrument is justified. The bit I've always struggled with if we were at a comedy gig and someone kind of gets out a guitar or an instrument and is incredibly proficient on it, but they're not being funny, then I kind of, I've always had an awkwardness about that. Like, virtuosity is, yes, it's amazing, but if it's not, if it's not needed or wanted in that moment, it can make the audience feel a bit uncomfortable. And
well, yeah,
and if you, I mean, if you Phil, Google... Phil can make an acoustic guitar feedback and distort just by the way that you hit it. And like, your guitar is like a, when I see it, if you still got that Takamine one, is it still going?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Where you've worn through above the thick E string just from knocking seven bells out of it night after night after night. But that guitar is like, it's like Willie Nelson's one that that fella has to kind of
trigger.
Yeah, put back together once a year for Willie.
He's got a name. Willie Nelson's guitar has a documentary made about it. So his guitar is more famous than us.
It's incredible. Yeah, exactly. And I
it's called Trigger.
I've seen it. And the guy goes, you're going to have to get a lot of dead skin cells out of there and put a little bit of acetate on that bit to get, you know, where a fingernail's burnt off. And it's incredible. But I've always admired the way that you use your musical abilities as a comedian. It's really quite unique what you do, Philip. And I will not let this podcast go by without addressing that.
Yeah, but we'll just edit this part out. Going back to the musical, though, you didn't finish. What are you? Were you going to have a title?
Yes,
it's exciting. It sounds like an you got animated even more than normal. I mean, you're quite an animated man.
Yeah,
but you became really animated. It went. It's so launching into a new form of writing musical songs. We've interviewed Tim Minchin.
Wow.
For this, and obviously he writes. He's a Tony Award winning musical writer. But it was comedy songs and cabaret songs that is where he started.
Yes.
And I think this might be the same thing for you. Well, this could be a Tony Award winning musical.
Again, I wouldn't, I don't have the musical chops to even eat at the same table as Timothy. He is a remarkable creative force, isn't he? It's really interesting. So me and Helen did that play called The Ladder, and then we came home and I went off back doing gigs again, and Helen just thought, what am I doing now? And she's teaching a bit of drama at the local school. She's doing lots of little bits and jobs. And she's a brilliant actor and writer in her own right. And she was just... So, and then this idea came to her. So our son, Lenny, who's now 13, has always... Well, since he's about four or five, has dealt with a stammer throughout his... as he's been growing up. And he played table tennis with a little boy who was profoundly deaf. And Helen suddenly struck this boy who struggled to get his words out playing table tennis with a little boy who couldn't hear what was being said. And then she had this idea of a boy who wants to be a stand-up comedian but thinks he can't do it on account of his stammer. And she wrote this book just on spec at the kitchen table and then sent it out. Just sent it out. Yeah. She'd never written a novel before. Sent it out to loads of agents, about 50-odd agents. She got some... amazingly got some traction with one of them, and then she had some notes back and forth, and it did, and they thought it saw it in a slightly different mold, and she saw it slightly differently, and I'll go, just say please, just do it. And then she kind of went, but the story's not that, quite that for me. And then she sent it out to another load, and then this lady rang up one Sunday and just said, I've just read your manuscript. And she's a big agent, and just said, I've just sat there laughing and crying in my back garden. Do you want to come down to London tomorrow and talk to me about it?
Brilliant.
Off the back of that, she's got this book out called The Boy Who Made Everyone Laugh.
Well, I've heard about it, and it struck me because I don't know if I've ever said this to you, but I have a clinical stutter.
Really?
I'm a stutter, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which is why I have the weird speech pattern that I have, because if I get to a point where I feel like I'm going to stutter, I just change the subject. And I became a stand-up comedian, so...
Wow,
if you're looking for someone to play the part in the musical...
Of Billy! Yeah, we could play The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come.
It's who you know.
That's amazing. So how did it affect you growing up?
Well, I wasn't able to speak properly. I also had a lisp and a Scottish accent. So, and then I moved to Canada, and I was really short for my age. And I was a born-again Christian who wasn't allowed to wear denim or listen to television programs. So I got picked on a lot.
Oh, my God, mate.
And when I was able to speak, I wanted to become an actor or a performer. So it's very common, I think, very common for people with speech impediments or cleft palates or anything like that to become announcers.
Yes, because it's the way of commanding the your speech pattern, isn't it? I mean, certainly I know that when my dad had one to the point that it stifled him at school. He really struggled academically, my dad. And I know when I'm tired, or I also know when I start talking about it, I become hyper aware of my speech patterns and I can start to stumble. Sometimes on stage, it can go, and I just have to address it every now and then. But I wouldn't put myself in that bracket of having to really deal with it. And it's been fascinating watching Lenny grow up and inspiring, because it doesn't hold him back from expressing himself, which is the relief from a parent's point of view.
No, when I visited you, when I was up visiting you, he played the piano for us. You got him to play the piano for us, and he's already quite a great piano player, David. And I think that kind of what brought it out of me was my attention to art, writing poems and expressing myself on paper. And then as I got older, I used to read read a lot. And so I was well read. I was like super smart, but none of the teachers would ever ask me to answer a question because it would take me forever to get it out. Mm. And I'd get laughed at, and then I'd get upset. It was quite severe for quite a while. But playing an instrument, playing the guitar, helped, because it gives you focus, and my fingers don't stutter. And I think a lot, if you approach it properly, it's something you can overcome using music and comedy.
Incredible. And do you think that way of sort of annotating your thoughts and speech with music, which gave you a focus, it gives you a framework in many ways to hang the words around, doesn't it? So it's like having a scaffold for communicating, and that having that scaffold with communicating things that were very important to you and that were coming from your heart, to walk without this. Now the scaffolding has become a walking frame, but without the walking frame is the metaphor.
Well, I think it's common knowledge that people with speech impediments like to know what they're saying, so they can. I can say a monologue, or I can sing a song without ever stuttering. Dave Johns, who's quite a famous British comedian, has quite a severe stutter in his day to day life, but when he speaks on stage, it's flawless.
Well, yeah, but Ed Sheeran apparently had a crippling stammer as well, and. I remember when we were growing up in our village shop, Mr. Longson, who ran the village shop, Brian Longson, had a really big stammer in his speech, but he had this incredible tenor operatic singing voice that I remember doing it at a PTA thing. It just blew everyone's minds. Like, it was incredible. Yeah. And certainly Len has gravitated as well, the piano, and he's really connected. He drums me out of the garage. That is his ability to dissociate his limbs and almost see time opened up. On a macro scale, like, blows my head apart. Like,
So he plays the drums as well.
And it's incredible. And I think that, I mean, the rhythmic nature of dissociation on a piano and drum. I imagine if you wanted to, David, you could really open up the drums in a way that would surprise yourself. You probably already play, don't you?
I've recently started having my drum lessons.
Great.
And yes,
and I imagine I bet you're a better drummer than I am already.
I can do some very basic things.
Yeah, but I imagine you're doing really
your
well.
Your son's probably quite a lot better than
me. It is nuts. It's incredible. But I can see how, and like sometimes when I can tell when he's nervous or when he's struggling to get his words out, sometimes he'll sort of drum on his legs occasionally to help him get through a moment. And I know that listening to Scroobius Pip's podcast, he learned how to sort of drum with his fingers on his legs to enable him to get through kind of blockages. But certainly, like, I just feel that I know that the music element of my son, it's so good for his, it's just his confidence. Helen took him to a barber's the other day to have his hair cut. And she said last time he'd been in there, he just sat in the chair and not talked. And every time the guy asked a question, him questions, he'd look at his mum and kind of go, "Hur." And Helen said, "Right, when you go in there, I want you to ask him some questions and then just see what happens." And Len ended up like, this guy's from Turkmenistan and found all this stuff about him, about his family. His dad taught him how to cut hair, and he came back brimming with all this information because he'd, you know, this boy with his stammer, he'll make an effort and chat to people. And it's glorious to see. And I long may that continue, because, you know, for anyone, if anyone does have any, you know, issues with whether it's confidence or they're shy or they have a stammer or something they feel holds them back, if you can keep somehow pushing at it, pushing through it, you know, people out there are lovely, aren't they? And they will connect. And I just think people can really surprise themselves and each other. And so Helen wrote this lovely book. Sorry, long story short, I'm enjoying talking. I'd not be able to talk to people very much.
Podcast. As long as people are enjoying listening,
hopefully it's interesting. Hopefully. And then
I think this is a subject that's close to my heart. So I'm on his side.
Yeah. Well, send you a copy of the book so you can read it as well. And so people have said to Helen, like, you should try and maybe turn this into a play. And she thought, I don't really know what there is to be gained by turning this particular thing into a play. And then she went to the Sheffield premiere of Jamie the Musical. She had it in the diary. A musical, a boy who can't really, is struggling to speak, but can speak directly to the audience through song.
Yeah.
Then you've got that's a massive lever as to why to make it a musical. So we just thought, well, let's write it. Let's have a go at it. And right. So it's this huge project, and it's really interesting. As we come out of the sort of the lockdown, I'm determined, and I adore doing stand-up. I've really enjoyed being back on the stage doing it. But I don't want to just go back to being on the circuit, going round and round and round. At the age of 47, despite being better at stand-up than I've ever been, it is a circuit. It goes round. And I'm thinking, I want to apply some of the things that I've learned over the lockdown and over recent years and try it. So I do want to give myself big projects. So I'm doing gigs. I'm doing my Patreon thing. I'm writing a musical with Helen, and I'm building my mother-in-law an annex in the garden. So that's enough to keep me to kind of go. I can. That's a couple of years. I'm going to work on those things, and I'm really excited about being overwhelmed by the size of the, particularly the building and the musical projects.
No, that's good. I don't think that's overwhelmed is not a bad feeling, because as long as it doesn't. You know, it become a negative. Being overwhelmed is a really nice place to be.
Yeah.
It means that you're doing something new, and especially as we get older, to try and do something new can always be really satisfying.
Big time. And it forces you to break everything down into layers. So I'm just operating within my limitations, but actually I'm surprising myself with the music that we're coming up with. It's really interesting. But by just thinking, I can have a go at it, because Helen's an amazing writer. So I know we can get the lyrics incredible and get them to really tell story and surprise people. And then just keep chipping away with the music. It's really, really, really good fun.
It's fun.
That's amazing. I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Is there a comedy song or anything that you listened to when you were younger that made you really, really want to do some sort of comedy songwriting?
I think I can't think of one specific. I mean, I could think of a bunch. I could think of, like, you know, things that stood out in my head, like the Lumberjack song in Monty Python.
Amazing. Yeah.
Incredible. I remember seeing, and then when I was a bit older, seeing South Park the Musical. The opening 10, 15 minutes of South Park the Movie, which is this incredible symphony of, I mean, South Park is insane, isn't it? Like,
it is. It's incredible.
The quantity and quality that those chaps have built over the years, and so quietly. Like, you don't see them turning up at everything or flouncing. They just really work on that, don't they? And
yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah.
They did go to the Oscars high on acid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they do it on their own terms, don't they?
They kind of didn't take it very seriously.
Oh, it's brilliant. But I mean, like, just the musicianship and the composition in that, and it goes through all different modes and ends up being like and Uncle Fucker and all those bits of it. It's just crazy. Yeah. So that would be there. And then I think Vic and Bob, it's interesting. I've been having a real Vic and Bob revisit recently because I've been listening to Bob's audiobook, which is just beautiful. And I remember as a teenager sitting there watching the telly on my own, and this fella came on in a white suit and said, "Watch me, Vic Reeves, Big Night Out, Channel 4, Friday at 9. And I just went, I'm in. And it fell out of from outer space. So I was aware, and his level, the way that he performed and his integration of music and stuff, that definitely had an impact on me. So it's comes from lots of different, and old routines of Morecambe and Wise using music, and Andre Previn and all those things. Yeah, there's so many brilliant moments. Oh, Christ, Spinal Tap. I can't go into it without...
Well, the Mighty Wind, all of Christopher Guest.
Oh, Jesus
stuff.
Christ. And the second album, Spinal Tap, with Break Like the Wind, and just...
Yes.
It's like, again, it's the quality of those things.
Well, I saw Spinal Tap play on Canada Day. They did a Canadian tour... When they did it in one day, because the way when you fly west across Canada, you gain time. So they did noon in Halifax for the Canada Day celebrations there in front of about 60,000 people.
Oh, amazing.
Then they flew to Quebec and gained time. So they were on about 2 o'clock, even though it's about 5 hours later. Mm. 2 o'clock Canadian time in Quebec to about 35,000 people. Then they flew to where we were performing in Toronto, and then that was about 4 o'clock. Then they flew on and they finished the night in Vancouver, where they were just before the headline act, which I think might have been someone like Nirvana.
Incredible.
And what they did is when they came in on Toronto, the tour bus was pulling in, and everyone said, "Oh my God, it's Spinal Tap!" But they forced every single musician and performer out from backstage into a holding pen in front of the stage to watch, where you could stand and watch the bands on stage but still be cut off from the audience. But they forced us all, and that included Neil Young, who played along because of Spinal Tap. They refused to get off the bus until every single person, including Neil Young, was standing in front watching the stage. So of course the audience was like, who's going to be the special guest? It must be an amazing special guest.
Incredible.
Of course, the lights come up and on comes Spinal Tap. But the best bit of it was they sounded absolutely amazing.
Incredible, aren't they?
They all play their instruments, like even all the basses on Big Bottom, they got the basses out. And it wasn't a click track. Mm. And the place went absolutely nuts. And then they refused to let us backstage until they were back on the tour bus and they had to escape. Now, obviously, that was because they didn't have the time to sit around because they had to get to the airport to get to Calgary or to get to Winnipeg for their 6 o'clock show, and they did an entire Canadian tour.
That's
in one
incredible
day.
But that's so tap that they had to get straight back on the bus, because it just works on every level, doesn't it? It's like when didn't they do Live 8 or the Live 8 concert? And certainly Nigel's guitar wasn't working for about 5 or 10 minutes.
The Freddie Mercury
and
tribute.
And it may have been a genuine fault, or it may have been just them being tap. My mate Steve, who was our drummer in Saucy Jack, which James is absolutely nailed there in the comments on the side there, our producer James, that Saucy Jack, of course, we got the name for the band from Spinal Tap. But Steve went to watch him at the Royal Albert Hall, and he said, and they did the full thing with the pods in Rock and Roll Creation, and having to be rescued just in time to hit the last note, and then the song ends. But
unbelievable.
He said it is genuinely to this day one of the, and he's an absolute music head, Steve, one of the best gigs he's ever seen.
Yeah, they're great musicians.
Mm. Rob, you write and you play songs, and we would love to hear you play something.
Okay.
Is there a tune that you could give us?
Well, I mean, I'm very happy to do, if I can remember it, because I've not played it since my sellout 3-night run at the Edinburgh Festival, which James, our producer here, was present at the last night, weren't you? And I think we're still drunk after the lovely night we had celebrating. But I'd be very happy to attempt to play the Neil Young beard trimmer incident for you.
I would love to hear
the Neil Young beard trimmer.
Yes,
incident.
Which
now Neil's now married to Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah, that's correct, off of Splash.
Right. This is a
song I originally wrote on my Patreon channel, and it just fell out of nowhere. Well, I mean, there was an incident where Neil Young accidentally caught himself when he was just having an experiment with trimming. And he, so I'd just like to just clear up, as I set the scene for this, it's not something that happened to me because I was feeling a bit too old. That's not what happened. I'm wondering what all this manscaping was about. It's something that happened to Neil.
To Neil Young.
Not me. And it's something that Neil has categorically not attempted since.
No.
But again...
Right. I heard he's denied it in the press.
Yeah. But it's complicated because he's told me all about it, but I just want to just clear up the fact that this isn't something that happened to me.
It's
something that happened to Neil. Yeah, and I only know this because... which Neil is now... has moved in next door with Daryl.
Was he here?
Yeah, because the old lady moved out.
He lives next door to you?
Yeah, the old lady moved out in lockdown and then they moved in. I thought, it can't be Neil Young. And Daryl, but then I saw them moving in Hammond organs, loads of old vintage instruments, and also I saw some mermaid costumes on the Whirly Gig at the bottom of the garden drying off. So I thought, it's Neil and Daryl.
It's Neil and Daryl.
But Daryl and my wife Helen like to watch Love Island together. So she pops around and they watch Love Island. They watch the Shiny Boys on that, and then me and Neil talk about how maybe we feel a bit old. When the girls are watching the Shiny Boys. And then that's when Neil confided in me about this issue he had with a beard trimmer. And I said, look, mate, once I'd, you know, he'd stopped crying, I said, look, maybe we should just get in the garage and we'll get it recorded. And you might, I think you've got a hit on your hands. But also, our local garden centre has opened up a beauty salon, which again, this is the truth. It's very strange. So that now it's like a wooden shed, but it's a beauty salon. So now and there's a cafe there. There's a bonsai shop. There's a bike hire business. There's a metalwork. There's a stonemasons. There's a woodworkers. There's a climbing wall, and it's insane. It's a one stop shop for everything in the Peak District. And I can go there, get three bags of compost, have a cappuccino and a back sack and crack. Do you know what I mean? It's incredible. Yeah. I could buy a trowel, some begonias, and have an anal bleach. You know, all in a small wooden shed in a garden centre. Anyway, so Neil had gone down to the garden centre with Daryl, and that's included in the song as well. But that's okay. You've got the context. But this is an experience that Neil had, and not me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I nicked my nutsack in a hotel room. I didn't know how else I could tell you. I'd had a bath and was sat on the loo and thought that maybe I should trim down there. You watch them TV shows with all those guys who are smoother than a baby's bottom. The trimmer caught me on the seam between my nuts, and the blood squirted out something rotten. All right. Yeah, caught me right on the seam. The blood came out like a hypodermic needle. I tell you what, if you ever stay at the Travel Lodge in Haydock Park, avoid room 436. Looks like one of the fucking Bundy murders happened in there. All right. All right. Okay. I hadn't factored in the warmth of the bath that on the skin it had been loosening. Those gnashing blades that can cut through heavy beards made like work of my poor saggy old ball skin. You watch them TV shows with all those guys with their torsos oiled up and gleaming. They're full-grown adults, but due to strange fashions, they don't got a single pube between them. What's happening in our modern age when pubes, they go the same way? All right. All right, let's do this. Last Sunday, Daryl said, when you finished your soup, shall we go down to the garden center? Said, yes, please, D, that sounds real, real swell. But I was not prepared for what I found down there. They've got a hut where you can bleach your butt hole or just get your eyebrows or your nails done. I said, no, thank you, ma'am, but she pulled my pants down and shoved a bottle of Domestos up my bum. All right, okay. What's happening in our modern age when folks are worrying about the color of their assholes? We gotta pull our heads out of our butts. Think of the children and the planet also. All right, I'm gonna take a Neil Young solo here. But for it, Daryl had been a pushin'. It was the most insane pain of my life, and now I have to sit on a special cushion. All right. Gotta say, what a pleasure it is to be on this great podcast. Would just like me to point out that this definitely happened to me and not to Rob, although some of that truth might seem a little bit too convenient. All right. Here you go, guys.
Thank you. Yay!
That one comes out. I haven't played that for a long time.
Neil Young.
That was amazing.
Neil Young on our Neil podcast. Young. Thanks,
on our
Neil.
Podcast.
Say hello to Daryl for
Thank
us.
Thank you for to Neil as well for just popping in and doing that. Because
yeah, I mean,
wait, it's easy. He's only over the fence.
I hope you don't mind, but when we promote the podcast, we're probably going to push Neil kind of hard.
That's cool, man. That's totally cool.
Yeah,
I can. Do you need any pictures of Neil in the garage?
We might maybe get a couple of pictures.
Yeah,
of
that
Neil
would be lovely.
Garage.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to take them stills off the Zoom? Because I can go and get him now if you need him.
No, you could just maybe take some for us and send them to me.
Yeah, I've got some pictures.
Neil to send us a selfie.
I've got some pictures of Neil performing it. Yeah.
Well, thanks. That's Rob Rouse. Thank you, Rob Rouse.
What an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on. It was a joy. It's lovely to see you guys, and lovely to chat and lovely to chat to your audience. And what a thrill to be on. Thank you
so much, Rob.
Anytime.
goodbye, adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're gonna have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye, goodbye.
You're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh. I'm Phil Nichol.
And I'm David Timms.
And that was a great show, I thought. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
From Joe Dolce to the comedy competition.
And then to Rob Rouse. Absolutely fantastic. What a man.
If you'd like to hear more from Rob Rouse or see more of Rob Rouse, why not follow him at patreon.com/Rob Rouse? Or why not buy his wife's book, Helen Rutter's The Boy Who Made Everyone Laugh?
And please keep on sending in those songs for the Songs in the Key of Laugh song competition to songsinthekeyoflaugh.com.
If you'd like to support our podcast, go to patreon.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh. Or coffee.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh. It's Songs in the Key of Laugh.
With me, David Timms.
And me, Phil Nichol.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.